This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Justice League Doom. Special edition iFanboy podcast on Justice League Doom. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I have once again assembled the iFanboy animation brain trust, and that includes Chris Niesman.
Hello.
And Ryan Haupt.
I'm feeling animated.
And of course, as always, Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
We get together, we talk about the DC Universe original animated films that come out. This is the 13th in the series. If you can believe it, it's 13th of Justice League Doom. Written by the late Dwayne McDuffie. We'll talk about that later. Directed by Lauren Montgomery. And no relation to Paul. And it is the adaptation of the Justice League Tower of Babel storyline that Mark Waid wrote almost directly after Morrison. Was it the first story after Morrison left the book way back then? I don't even remember anymore. Because
Has everyone read this?
Nope.
I have read it.
I've definitely read it. The basic premise is that Batman has a file on everyone in the Justice League, how to defeat them should they go rogue or evil or get mind controlled. Basically,
he's smart in that these are super powerful beings. If they go crazy or bad, as they have almost all of them in some point in the comic's history, how would I defeat them? And he has files. Those files in the comic are stolen by Ra's al Ghul. In the movie, they're stolen by Vandal Savage. And then chaos ensues, and there's some emotional fallout from the whole thing.
He's being Batman.
Basically. That's the basic premise of the story.
It makes a lot of sense when you consider that Mark Waid, you know, wrote and is writing Irredeemable, which is the whole idea of, you know, like Superman gone bad. So that's sort of where his mind goes to absolute power corrupting absolutely. Worth noting, someone in the comments in the text review, you can read the text review on ifanboy.com, mentioned that Mark Waid is not listed as, you know, story by on this movie. And it's not called Tower of Babel. It's called Justice League Doom. And in a lot of these films, they make an important case out of saying, you know, we borrowed the style of, you know, Mazzucchelli for the Batman Year One story. And, you know, this is the big Grant Morrison Superman story and All-Star Superman. So it's kind of interesting that Mark Waid and also reportedly didn't even get invited to the screening and probably wouldn't even get a copy of the DVD. Yeah. Someone brought that up, but on Twitter, he mentioned that he was totally shafted on this one. So.
Are he and DC on the outs?
They're not in good terms right now.
Right.
You know, he seems to kind of just go back and forth with all of the comic companies like that. Even though I think everything I've always heard is that he's a really, really well-respected and liked guy in the industry, but whatever.
So that is the backstory. The story itself is a pretty simple one. It's actually pretty fast-paced. It's almost over before you realize it. The Legion of Doom is gathered together by Vandal Savage in their old little swamp hangout in Louisiana with their submerged base from the old Super Friends days, and they steal the info on the Justice League, and they attack the Justice League, and they almost defeat the Justice League until the very end when they are defeated by the Justice League. And that's basically the story. What did we think? You gave it a really strong review.
Anyway. I did. I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was important to ask which of us actually read the original storyline, and if I remember, so it was just me and Chris haven't read it.
Right.
But Connor and Ryan have read it. So
yes.
So I think that's sort of important to know, because some of the people who commented on the article said that they were sort of let down. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people were let down, though, and they mentioned that it wasn't a very good adaptation, and there were changes that they didn't like from the original story. So can you guys sort of speak to any of the changes from the storyline that you recall? I think there's like Vandal Savage isn't in the original comic storyline. That was Ra's al Ghul.
I think the biggest change I noticed was now that we've gone back to the Silver Age, Barry Allen and Hal Jordan, Flash and Green Lantern, respectively. The biggest difference I noticed was the lack of Kyle Rayner and Wally West. I mean, to me, that was especially stark because you still had Michael Rosenbaum doing the voice of the Flash, even though he was doing a different Flash.
Yeah, it was interesting. Well, first of all, I read the story 12 years ago. I couldn't even tell you much about it other than the basic premise of it. I mean, it was 2000, and it's 2012, and it's been a long road between here and there.
Well, it was Hal Jordan for all of the obvious reasons. So
yeah, I mean, it's interesting as Ryan mentioned, it was the original animated voice cast brought back together, voicing a team that was drawn in the manner of the Young Justice cartoon in the last DC.
Yes, that's what it was.
And yeah, also,
it's Phil Brusso who did the character designs for Justice League Crisis on Two Earths. So it's sort of a continuation of that. Not entirely the same Justice League. I mean, they did, like, Aquaman wasn't in this one. He was in that one.
I was really hoping there was going to be a Deus Ex Aquaman moment where he was coming out of the swamp, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, but so more towards like a kind of an anime style instead of the Bruce Timm style from JLU and the JLA TV series.
It was also, the lineup-wise, it was a mashup of the JLU and the current lineup in the comics right now. So it was a lot of different elements being matched together and then shaken in a bag to get this particular team, this particular production.
That's one of my general nitpicks about not just this, but, you know, the Justice League, how it is right now. I have nothing against Cyborg, but I don't really have anything for Cyborg either. I know it's a character that's been around, since the 70s from the New Teen Titans, but what is this weird agenda to make Cyborg one of the heavy hitters at DC?
That's sort of how I think about him, unfortunately, is that like they're constantly trying to bring him up to being one of the heavy hitters. And it kind of hurts the fact that in the comics, he's still designed the same way as he was like back in the 70s. Like, it's a really kind of terrible design. So I actually really liked the design he had here. It was more of an update.
Yeah.
It was kind of a bit of steel in him in this one.
Yeah. And a USB port.
Yeah. well, I mean, clearly they want to have a bit more racial balance. And getting rid of John Stewart means they have to have someone else and bring back Hal Jordan. The Barry Allen thing was weird because Rosenbaum did voice Wally West, but
it was a little bit jarring because like his version of Wally is so happy-go-lucky and manic, whereas you can really tell here that he's like, you know, being a little bit more restrained as Barry.
Well, one thing I will say in Michael Rosenbaum's defense is that in the Justice League cartoon, Wally West is a police scientist. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that level of continuity.
No, I mean that's part of the whole mashup of it. They basically took a bunch of different elements and they sort of smushed them together to make this
team. And that's
fine. It was fine. Yeah. It's its own entity. It doesn't make really.
It didn't bother me. It was Paul asked if there were differences that I noticed. I noticed it. I didn't notice me.
The main difference is to be the lineup of the team and basically.
And 95% of the people that are going to watch this have never read the source material. And that's, you know, even a lot of comic fans like Paul and myself have never read that source material. So I don't think it's important. I think it's probably more important for it to be in the Timverse continuity than it is in actual comics continuity.
I did laugh, Chris, thinking I wasn't thinking about you specifically, but I was thinking about X-Men fans because there's a scene where each of them are paired up with their nemesis and they're all running at each other. And it was like the opening credits of the 90s X-Men cartoon.
I know.
It's true.
That was one of the other things that I was disappointed in the story about, is that usually you always see the hero and their nemesis lock horns. Every once in a while, we'll get to see the leader of the good guys say, "Well, the only way that we can beat them is if we, you know, is if we fight the nemesis that, you know, we're not paired against, whatever." Right. So, you know, I wanted to see like Hal, instead of fighting Star Sapphire, him fighting, you know, Metallo and Superman against Vandal Savage. Or
I was surprised by that too. I kept waiting for it to happen. It just
yeah.
You know, why isn't Wonder Woman, you know, fighting the evil Martian, you know, or whatever? So that was the one thing at the end. It seemed very formulaic. And you saw this story from the very beginning through the end. It's like, okay, they're going to get totally owned by the Legion of Doom, and then they're going to come back and they're going to, you know, flip the switch and beat up their counterparts. And that's exactly what happened. But it was very entertaining to get there, but it was pretty predictable.
Yeah, I would agree. I think for me, it fell smack in the middle of the pack of movies.
Yeah.
In that there were good bits of it and things about it I liked, but for the most part, it was kind of by the numbers.
Are we still saying that the Crisis is the best out of them? That's been my favorite.
I think that's been yours. I don't know that's I ranked them a while ago, and I don't even remember what I ranked at the top. I probably ranked
Green Lantern.
Shut up.
Public Enemies right underneath it.
You guys like the Justice League New Frontier?
Yeah, that's what my
love.
That's sort of in the middle for me. I would hold Wonder Woman and Under the Red Hood as some of my favorites. And I also like Batman Year One as a character study, just for the Jim Gordon stuff, because Cranston's so great in that. But
what was the one with the fourth world, the fourth world stuff, the with the super
apocalypse,
the,
Superman Batman Supergirl. Apocalypse.
I really like that one.
I would say of the Justice League movies, this would might be at the bottom.
Really?
I don't know. I don't know why. It just felt very rote. And hopefully it's not because the movies are becoming rote. It's just because this particular one was rote. But it just didn't have anything that really struck out at me story-wise. And I mean, it's just kind of like bad guys meet, bad guys fight. Win the first battle, they lose the second battle, the movie's over. And It didn't have anything really particularly interesting that went on.
You did have the kind of geeky fanboy moment of the Legion of, you know, Doom headquarters rising out of the swamp. And I was like, all right, that's kind of cool. You know, I'll never get tired of seeing that, just because that does scratch all of the, you know, the fanboy itches and the nostalgia factor. But one of the, you know, they redesigned it, and they actually did a lot of character redesigns. How did you guys like those? Like Mirror Master
is that's a really interesting case, because it's a very different characterization for Mirror Master. I mean, it's a different look. I mean, it's the same color palette.
I don't think he was snorting coke at any point during the movie.
Right. I found him like really unsettling, because Alexis Denisov was playing him so calm and collected. Mm-hmm. And he had kind of like a Hannibal Lecter thing going. He's basically says he's got a dead grandmother in a box.
Yeah, that was actually very creepy.
Whoa. And so it's like there's a dissonance between, he's like, he's not, you know, like a raving lunatic. He's completely collected. Yeah. But then he's saying this really creepy stuff, so that makes him even creepier. So that's one in particular that I liked a lot.
I liked his look a lot. His suit was basically see-through. But yeah, not in the he's naked, but like you can see the back of his arm and you can see the back of his leg. I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, because I love the original Mirror Master character design. The Infantino design, I think, is great. Mm-hmm. So it was a little off-putting, but I think we had mentioned the Cyborg update, and that looked updated. You know,
Metallo looked cool, I thought.
Yeah. Why,
you know, they always, you know, do like a very straight up like android design. Like he's the same dimensions as a human because he's underneath like human flesh and clothing and stuff. So in this one, they make him actually burst out of the human form, and he's this bigger, sort of like an Iron Giant kind of look.
Yeah.
But really, really creepy look. Top heavy. Yeah. And lanky limbs and stuff. I thought that was great. Really weird. I'm thinking about the really weird scene where he's where they're toasting each other. They're having a little celebration in the Hall of Doom, and they're all drinking wine. That was an odd scene. Cheetah had a cool look. Australian for some weird reason. I don't know. Version of the character.
Because Claudia Black is fucking awesome. That's why.
I know she's a notable voice actress. Is kind of an interesting choice.
Loved it.
Okay, she's Australian. Fine.
Any other Farscape fans here? I just get excited anytime that Claudia Black is in anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's all.
I thought Bane had a really weird costume. It looked like he put on a tank top sideways.
That's kind of close to what he, you know, normally wears. It
didn't work for me.
I want Bane
in a trench coat, and I don't want to be able to understand a word he's saying.
Is this the first movie of the Justice League since the DC reboot, right? Batman Year One.
Yeah.
This is the movie that really had me thinking about why, and I don't want this to turn into a show about the reboot, but misfire most of the redesigns were in the reboot, when they should have gone towards the animated way of simplification and sort of focusing on the classic elements of the costumes rather than the overly designed, overly busy, overly detailed costumes.
They're all very modern designs. They're very sleek looking. They're not too convoluted, which is, you know, a lot of the Jim Lee designs are kind of like, why would you give all of the artists so much work to do? I mean,
all those extra lines on Batman's costume. I mean, they're just, it seems to me when you watch these animated versions, they get the characters right and they get the looks right. And
they're clean and classic, and they're that way for a reason.
They're clean and classic without looking like played out and too traditional. They're not, you know, playing too close to like the Golden Age or anything. They look like very modern updates of that classic look.
You know, Denny O'Neill talked about Batman and just the mystique of that character. And one of the things that he mentions a lot is the silhouette. It's that silhouette of that character that is so striking. And I think whenever you try and go inside the silhouette and fill it in with all of a bunch of your own noodling, you miss what makes those characters look classic. And the animated team, and Connor nails it, the Timverse, and you have to imagine that he's a big part of that. Bruce Timm understands the classic appeal of those characters.
So while we're on the subject of Batman, one of our readers, Dave Carr, asked us, do we agree with what Batman did here?
Of course.
Hell yeah.
The whole thing is it's seen as a betrayal by the Justice League, the rest of the team that he went in and sort of took advantage of their weaknesses and laid out for someone how to defeat them, and it almost led to their death. So
I have a contingency plan right now to take care of all three of you by the end of this show if I have to.
Yeah. I was waiting for Paul.
I just call that good planning.
You stole my joke, Chris.
Ryan, when did you read this story? How long ago?
It wasn't 2000, but it was more recent than that, but not.
I could be misremembering. I probably am, but I think the whole point of the story was to bring them closer together. And so by the end of the story, they had all revealed their identities to each other, and they all knew each other better than they did before. That could be another Justice League story I'm misremembering.
That was in the animated that they did.
I know they happened in the comics as well, but I don't have a problem with it because he's right. I mean, if Superman goes rogue or gets mind controlled, which he has, they should know how to take him down. Just Hal Jordan's gone crazy, Wonder Woman's gone mad. I mean, all these characters at some point or another have had to be taken down. So why shouldn't the one guy with no real powers have a plan to do it if he's got to be the one to do it? Yeah. Now, his only problem was security. Clearly, he needed a better firewall. Yeah.
You shouldn't have used password as a password. Better or worse than what he did in, say, Identity Crisis? Because, Batman's known for making these kind of calls. Like in Identity Crisis, he had Zatanna wipe people's minds, right?
It's better because in Identity Crisis, it was actual physical or telepathic.
Yeah.
Intrusion into people's minds and bodies, whereas this was just he had files. Yeah.
He actually violated them in Identity Crisis. This one, he just planned to neutralize them. And he kept making the point over and over. It's like, I didn't have plans to kill any of you. They were all plans to basically take you out of the game. And it was Vandal Savage who changed that. So, I mean, he never planned to kill anyone.
Do you buy the other team members' anger at him, or like wanting Batman off the team?
No, it's Batman. How could you expect?
Do you just be like, yeah, it's Batman. It's fine.
Well, it. How could you
look? It's like when Josh says something really racist, and we're all just like, it's Josh. It's fine.
Just edit it out of the show.
Well, I think it could have been portrayed better in the movie, but I think that's a consequence of not having enough time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were upset, but they weren't totally upset because ultimately I think it's not a huge betrayal what he did. And then they only had 5 minutes to deal with it. So and 3 of those minutes were the credit sequence. So they didn't have a whole lot of time to deal with. I mean, it was funny. I was watching the clock as I was watching the movie, and we didn't even get into the revelation of what had happened until like 3/4 of the way into the movie. I mean, there wasn't a ton of time to deal with what Batman had done because we'd already done 60% of the film.
Well, it fell into the trap of big team movies because you either focus on one or two characters and make them the center point, or you divvy things up into a bunch of little minisodes, and that
that's going to be the big problem with the Avengers live action movie that comes.
It's
going to be the big question.
It's why isn't my guy getting more screen time? And I think that's what this animated kind of fell into, is that we had the segmented views of each character's story, and I guess Batman was the main. If there was one main character, it was Batman, but there wasn't enough of Batman to make it, really pay off. I enjoyed it. It was kind of like reading a pretty good Justice League story. It's not one that's going to be, held up on a pedestal for years and years and years, but I enjoyed it.
Well, let me just quickly defend my 4.5 star rating here out of 5. I think the reason that I rated it so strongly was that I sort of looked at it as a writing challenge, as an adaptation of something that obviously had a lot of characters. It's a big ensemble story, as you said, And I feel like in these last two Dwayne McDuffie adaptations, this and All-Star Superman, he was saddled with adapting some really big stories. Like, you know, then All-Star Superman is a 12-issue maxi series. It's episodic, but he made it feel like a film, and it worked. It's not a perfect film, and neither is this a perfect film, but I think he made the smartest choices. I feel like he structured it well. I was happy with it. I was glad that it wasn't just the individual trials for each of the team members, because again, I didn't read the original story. So just going in completely blind on what the story is, I thought it worked in that, okay, we've gotten through these individual trials for each of the characters. You know, we have Cyborg weaving in throughout, and then you have the bigger Vandal Savage storyline, which it's always cool to see, like, you know, the big space thing where Superman's going after a missile. Although that sequence was pretty cool. And it wasn't Superman who saved the day there. It was Hal Jordan, for the most part, like making this big shield. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a cool set piece. But mostly what I liked about it was that what I want out of a Justice League story is great relationship stuff where the characters are all interacting. And I think that's sort of maybe the fanboy thing that we get out of a Justice League story is seeing our favorite characters that we have in their own solo books come together and interact in interesting ways. So seeing Cyborg interact with Wonder Woman, seeing Batman put down Superman. I thought all those moments were really great. And it comes off of Dwayne McDuffie spending so much time on the Justice League TV series and Justice League Unlimited, and knowing those characters so well. So I think that's what really endeared me to this movie.
I stand with you. Like, I support the 4.5 rating. I think I like this a lot better than Connor and Chris seem to.
I didn't dislike it.
For a lot of those reasons.
I really like the Royal Flush Gang sequence. I thought was great.
I had one huge issue with that sequence, but other than
really?
That issue.
Was it about diamonds or...
No, it was. There's a scene where she's flying backwards on her card, but the jets are still pointing behind her. I was like, that was
slowing herself down.
I guess so. Well, also that missile that Vandal Savage fired would have been traveling faster than the speed of light to reach the sun as quickly as it did. But
so the science guy, for the science guy, how did you like how Barry got rid of his bomb?
I thought that was. I mean. It's as fine an explanation as we were going to get, I suppose. So I was cool with it. I mean, these movies, you know, Bruce Timm and that whole studio always plays pretty fast and loose with the laws of physics. You almost have to be able to, even for Batman, to be able to fight the way he does. Physics just doesn't really work, so I roll with it. But there are times where there are glaring enough errors. And the fact that Superman even said right after the bomb went off, okay, we've got 8 minutes to deal with this getting to Earth. And I'm like, but it didn't take you 8 minutes to even get to the sun in the first place. So the distances between the Earth and the sun were a little ridiculous, but it's leap day. So who knows what's going on? I don't know where we are.
Exactly.
I will say the characterizations and the voice cast, of course, was stellar. Awesome. This is a cast that does what they do. And I think Nathan Fillion is a great Hal Jordan. From that point of view, it was a wonderful. You know, the last movie we had was the Batman movie, which had most of a great cast. The problem was the main character was badly cast. But
I would contend that the main character is Batman.
The 1A character, right. the character in the title was badly cast. But this was, you know, as much as I like seeing the different interpretations of, you know, different actors doing different characters. I like seeing new Batman and new Superman. You know, there's something to be said for Tim Daly and Kevin Conroy, and something to be said for Rosenbaum and all this. You know, who's the woman that plays
Susan Eisenberg plays Wonder
Woman. Susan Eisenberg. All those originals are
Dave
great.
Dave also asked if we miss John Stewart in these movies at all. If we do, we prefer Hal Jordan, in the lineup or
Hal Stewart would be great. Actually, if bring back Hal Stewart.
Can I admit how stupid I was? I thought whenever they showed John Jones, I thought that was John Stewart for a minute.
Oh, when he was in human form?
Yeah. That was really cool because we never really saw that. And I think if we've ever seen that before, he's been the white guy detective. So they have a black John Jones as a detective.
At one point in Justice League Unlimited, he was an Asian man.
That's true. Or wasn't he an Asian woman or something?
He might have been an Asian woman.
They got married. There was an old, they were an old couple.
Yeah, no, he had a whole life. He had a whole life.
He had his own life. It was like the Next Generation episode where, anyways.
Well, one of the things about the cartoon I remember from doing the articles I used to, you know, watch all the shows, is they hardly ever showed the private lives of the characters in that show. Mm. he hardly ever saw them out of costume.
I had,
except for very few times.
I had a great laugh when it's Jon Stewart's birthday in this bar, and they bring out the birthday cake with all the candles.
There was lots of funny stuff, actually.
Oh, that was great.
That was funny. Batman was funny. Alfred, I thought it was a great Alfred.
Good Alfred moments.
There was some good stuff in it. It was good. I didn't give it a bad review. I certainly wouldn't put it with the Green Lantern movies or anything like that.
Well, to actually answer the question, no, I didn't miss Jon Stewart. I love Jon Stewart in the Justice League cartoon, but the thing that I always felt that Jon Stewart was lacking was that he was kind of a ring and bubble Green Lantern, or a beam and bubble Green Lantern. Yes. He didn't actually do a whole lot. There's like one scene where he makes a drill. But this Hal Jordan, the way he fought and used the ring, I thought worked really well. And he did a lot of inventive stuff. I particularly liked it when he was in the mine shaft and he shoved his fist onto the ground to make a construct come up out of the ground at a different place. Like, things like that were really cool.
No, I didn't miss him because we had 4 or 5 seasons of him. And I'm a Hal Jordan guy. You know, this is not... I mean, these aren't Tim Verse movies. I think a lot of people get hung up on that. These aren't, you know, these are their own things. So it's nice to see other characters, as long as they're never Kyle Rayner. Mm.
And I think it's great that sort of Nathan Fillion has taken on like the Tim Daly, Kevin Conroy thing, where he is their go-to Green Lantern now.
He's Green Lantern, and I think he loves being Green Lantern.
You guys need to watch this Daily Show episode that I sent you. Trust me, you'll get a laugh. Ooh.
Any other discussion topics, Paul? From
no, I think we're good. But you know, they did mention. We should talk about Dwayne McDuffie. Did anyone else get a chance to watch the documentary that's on the disc?
Not yet.
Okay, there's a really, really great, kind of just heartbreaking documentary called League of One: The Dwayne McDuffie Story, and I talk about it at length in a text review. But it really surprised me because I didn't know what to expect. Is it going to be this kind of fluff piece? And just for anyone who doesn't know, Dwayne McDuffie, comics writer and animation writer. He's written for Ben 10. He wrote for JLA, JLU. All of the sort of comics related, DC related animated stuff, and Static Shock, of course. And they talk about how he wrote the Static Shock pilot. You know, so it's like a, I guess, like 20 some page pilot because it was a half hour show. He wrote it in a day. Like, and then if that's like, you know, if it's one episode or something, fine. But like the first episode, and it's a great episode too. And they also talk about how he went to college really early. Like they mentioned, he took classes like when he was 10 or 12 years old. I haven't found a lot of information on that, but that's what they seem to be saying. And he was basically, he wanted to be a physicist and he wanted to be an astronaut, but he was 6'5", so he couldn't, you know, be on a space shuttle.
Yeah, that's too tall.
He's just too big. So
he's huge. I met him at a party once, and he made me feel small.
Mm. Wow.
Which I'm at 6'3" is no small feat. No, it's really heartbreaking. He was a very big guy in the community. Everyone loved him. You talked to him. I saw him speak a couple of times. I used to go to the screenings of these movies at the Paley Center in New York when I lived in New York, and he used to often go to those and speak afterwards, you know, the Q&A. And he was really well loved amongst the community, and he was a, you know, great writer. I hesitate to make any assumptions on whether or not this was a first draft or whatnot, because I think his other films have been much stronger, his other films in this series. But I think, you know, as much as I didn't love this one, I liked it, and his other films were great, and he's a voice that's going to be, that will be missed, and I'm looking forward to watching the documentary as soon as we're done with this.
Yeah, there's a lot of great talking heads in there. There's Joe Kelly, who worked with him on some of the Ben 10 stuff. And it's also his Action Comics 775 is going to be the next DC animated movie, Superman versus the Elite, they're calling it. Then his wife, Charlotte, who also wrote for animation. Well, it's Dennis Cowan. Dan DiDio is on there a bit. They don't talk a whole lot about his time at DC, which is understandable because that was a pretty frustrating time, as I understand it. They talk about, I mean, there's even a section that's on his
Marvel
years.
Considering how publicly he was exactly. About how awful it was.
But they talk about, you know, his Marvel years, and I was kind of surprised to see that pop up as like, it was. I mean, it's a big like chapter header, the Marvel years, and they talk about Deathlok. And they talk about the formation of Milestone, and it's a lengthy documentary.
How he's one of the few people that has been able to write an engaging Fantastic Four in the last 20 years.
They don't actually talk about Fantastic Four, which I was surprised because that was his big, like, his wish list thing. Before he got that gig, he'd said that was one of the things he really wanted to do, was write for the FF. So, but it's a great documentary. It's I mean, I was kind of tearing up by the end because the guy was sort of, I mean, what was he, 50 years old, something like that?
He was way too young.
He died like right after his birthday. It was a surgical complication. Everyone expected him to pull through. It wasn't like emergency surgery. So it was a big surprise. A couple of days beforehand, apparently, he met with Samuel L. Jackson's people and they wanted him to write features. Like they wanted him doing like live action stuff, I guess. And his career was really, you know, taken off. And just not nearly enough time and not nearly enough acclaim. Because the guy just really understood a lot of like what makes great team books, I think, and great team superhero stories.
I think as much as Bruce Timm should be credited for the Justice League cartoon, I think McDuffie should be as well. He wrote a good portion of the episode, some of the best ones. He really got that team, as you said, but he also he crafted this. I mean, these are famous characters. And for way more people than read the comics, the cartoon is their Justice League.
Well,
and so that's kind of his doing.
It's kind of what we were talking about with the costumes. Is that, you know, if you boil those down, they're clean and they're classic for you know, a reason. And I think that Dwayne McDuffie understood why these characters appeal to people. And so his versions of the JLA were versions that appealed to people because he understood what was at the core of each character and what made them tick. Yeah. Whenever you start heaping on, you know, tons and tons of baggage onto these characters that honestly people don't and shouldn't care about, that's when you start to lose interest. And McDuffie just got to the heart of what made these characters great. And that's why he was a great comic book and you know, animated writer. He's going to be missed.
I think one of the big testaments to his impact on how people view comics in the mainstream and the zeitgeist, really, back when they announced that it was going to be Hal Jordan and what's-his-face in the Green Lantern live-action movie.
Ryan Reynolds,
I'm sorry. It was going to be Ryan Reynolds cast in that role. A lot of people on the internet were outraged because they made Green Lantern white because they thought the Green Lantern was a black guy named John Stewart. And that's sort of like, I mean, it's sort of telling of his impact and also just maybe the state of what people know in the zeitgeist about comics and the characters in general, that, you know, they weren't aware of Hal Jordan, but still a lot of people embraced that character. And that was very important that there be a black character that, you know, wasn't a goofy sidekick or, you know, like,
or named Black something.
Or named Black something, or even in the cyborg role as like the you know, hanging on kind of guy. This was a major character in the Justice League.
Well, John Stewart was the best character in the first season of the Justice League.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, by far, he had the best story, he had the best backstory, the most interesting characterization. He was, I mean, he got the most screen time. He was the best character.
There's like that whole episode that starts off with him practically being Shaft. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Where he's just walking.
No, it was.
Walking through his old neighborhood, big trench coat. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. He will be missed.
On the cyborg thing, I was thinking they've been trying to do this for years because at the end of the, you know, the challenge of the Super Friends that went through several different iterations and
the superpowers
that they tried to, you know, introduce Cyborg as being, you know, the new member of the Justice League. So this has been going on for decades.
What they need, what they really need to do is justify it in a story fashion, because really that's where the only time people will accept it is when they give it a reason and they give them a great story.
Well, is that what they're trying to do with the Justice League comic right now? I stopped reading it. But.
No, but he's been in the background of that whole comic.
Yeah.
He wasn't even in the last issue at all. You know, they brought Steel to the Morrison team and they gave him a great moment and a great story, and that put him on. After that, no one questioned why Steel was on the Justice League. They need to give Cyborg a reason to be there rather than just to be there. And once they do, they figure it out, then it's fine. But they have to do it. They haven't done it.
And
yet.
One of the questions I forgot was that, do we think that based on the ending of this movie, and I guess it possibly mirrors what happened in the comics maybe, do we think that this is sort of a setup for how they're going to approach Justice League stories in the future? That Batman is ostracized from the league and that Cyborg is on the team?
No, because they exist on their own unless they're part of us. Series like the two.
Well, I mean, yeah, you have a visual tie-in with Crisis on Two Earths.
I don't think it's part of the
series. I think Crisis on Two Earths actually takes place in the JLU cartoon series, because at the end of Crisis on Two Earths, they actually start forming the Justice League Unlimited. So that's, I think, Crisis on Two Earths is the bridge between the first.
Well, it was originally meant. It was originally meant. That's what it was written. It was the TV movie that they were going to do to bridge it. They made it, but I think they play it fast loose whether or not it was or not. It can be if you choose to be, but I don't think any of these movies, except for Public Enemies and the other one, Apocalypse, I think, unless they state that they're part of a series, these are all separate worlds, separate characters, separate Earths.
I'm sure that they do have some sort of, you know, loose, you know, roadmap or loose set of rules, but I think the big thing is that they're just out there telling stories, and honestly, I'm much more pro story than pro continuity. You know, I don't care if they change up voice actors or if they bring John Stewart back to be Green Lantern for a movie. That's fine. As long as they're telling, you know, cool JLA stories, isn't that all that really matters?
Yep. I mean, there have been plenty of instances where Batman or Superman are not officially on the Justice League, but it's kind of an on-call, I'll be there if you need me thing. Yeah. So if they wanted to do another movie with the Justice League and Batman wasn't officially part of the Justice League, it's one throwaway line to say, oh yeah, Batman's on reserve duty right now because he's dealing with something in Gotham. Like, they don't have to reference this movie at all.
Agreed.
Well, the next one is Superman versus the Elite, as Paul said earlier. It's an adaptation of Superman 775, What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way.
You nailed it. In 2010, this was your number three on your list of top 10 most wanted original animated.
It's a great Superman. It's a great Superman story. So hopefully it'll be good. It's probably comes out in the summertime, which is usually when the second one comes out. And then supposedly Dark Knight Returns is next, but they haven't actually said anything since the first announcement.
Is there any sort? Did we kind of figure out the cycle at some point where it's like a JLA, a Superman, a Batman, and then another character?
Well,
you get it. Well, then you can throw Superman, Batman into the thing too.
Yeah.
It also depends on what's going on. We got a Green Lantern movie because it's a Green Lantern film.
I'm ready for a Flash movie.
I think we have to get a Flash film probably for that to happen.
I'm personally ready for a Flash animated movie. I think would be cool.
After Dark Knight Rises, do we know what DC is doing next?
Film wise, they have something in development. They wouldn't tell me what. I talked to someone and I said, "You have something in development that's not Superman or Batman?" They said, "Yes."
Ooh. I did notice that the logo at the beginning of the movie is not the new logo. They have not implemented that yet.
Yeah, they didn't. Well, it's probably too early. I don't know.
Yeah, too early.
I was curious to see what it would look like in movement, but I didn't get it.
I assume we'll see on the next one. Superman versus the Elite. We'll be back for that.
Wait for that Metal Men movie. Make it happen.
Chris will hold his breath. In the meantime, you go to fanboy.com. You can read Paul's text review where he gives Justice League Doom 4.5 out of 5 stars. And you can go to fanboy.com for all of our daily comic book content as well as our weekly podcast. You can check out Chris's podcast around comics. You can check out Science, sort of, from Ryan. Or you can check out Fuzzy Typewriter from Paul. We're all over the internet. You can check us all out. In the meantime, we'll talk to you in the summertime when we reconvene to discuss Superman vs. the Elite.
Ooh, something like that.
We'll talk to you then.
Yay!
Tell me again, Paul.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Fire you.